This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now it's time for the Scores Bears post-game show, starring Score football expert and former NFL player Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app.
And I'm broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Vikings take down the Bears 30-27, the final score from Soldier Field. Game that the Bears trailed late by multiple scores, able to fight back, work the game into overtime, couple of possessions going back and forth. Initially in overtime, neither team able to seize on those opportunities, and then eventually the ball goes back to the Vikings again. Sam Darnold drives them into position for a game-winning field goal. So, certainly with the results from a team perspective, disappointment is worthwhile there. But I think it's fair to say we're kind of at the point in the season where the pure win-loss aspect of it isn't the only thing this team is that it's necessary to judge this squad by. You know, until further notice, this isn't a team that's putting themselves in playoff position. This isn't a team. It looks like they, have a championship sort of path in front of them right now. So you got to judge the current version of the Chicago Bears for more than just whether or not they're able to come out with wins and losses. Performance of their rookie quarterback, their number one overall pick, Caleb Williams. That certainly was a bright spot for the Bears today. 32 out of 47, 340 yards, couple of touchdown passes, but what really stood out to me about the comfy QB is that he's back to looking comfortable. And I say back to looking comfortable because there was certainly a stretch there. Essentially, you know, statistically, folks have talked about weeks 4 through 6 where the completion percentage went up, the passer rating went up, overall performance of the entire team. Through the London game leading into the bye week, there was a lot to be encouraged by during that stretch. And coming out of the bye, it just wasn't looking good for a while. He didn't look comfortable. He didn't look decisive. And, of course, as we know, it led to the firing of Shane Waldron. Now this is back-to-back games with Thomas Brown calling the Bears offense. And, you know, I'm not here to tell you that Thomas Brown deserves all the credit for that. But I'll have some time to get into the detail of what I do like about what Thomas Brown is doing tonight and what he's been doing in the couple of games he's been calling the Bears' offense. But you're seeing a variety of things in Caleb's performance that have really grown, that have really stepped forward. And today's game against this particular defense, against the Minnesota Vikings, the top defense in football, for him to show not just comfort, but, you know, command, field generalship. That, to me, really stood out in the way that Caleb performed today, the way he seemed so composed throughout and really did a lot of things that seemed to will this team back into the game late. There have been a number of performances in recent years where the Bears have had close defeats, where they've come up short, and it's felt like perhaps the quarterback position, if they could just complete another couple of passes, or if the offensive line could have held up just a bit better. And there have been young QBs, whether it was Justin Fields, Mitch Trubisky, who in those critical moments, in the fourth quarter, in overtime, where the passing acumen, the command of the moment wasn't there to be able to truly lead the Bears back into these moments. And even in a loss, you look at the performance of the Bears rookie quarterback today, and there's a lot of positives to take from that. And I really thought that his demeanor, his energy, his urgency, it was a driving force in the Bears team performance today. And that was in the midst of a number of mistakes that were getting made around Caleb Williams. And he was still imperfect. There's no doubt about that. But to play the perfect game, especially as a quarterback, especially against that defense, you know, seasoned veterans aren't going to play a perfect game against the Brian Flores defense. But I really think, and you know, so far I basically just watched the live version of the game. So, you know, I suppose I'll save I'll be able to have a more detailed reaction to it tomorrow when I'm here on the Score. But my first blush reaction is this is the best game Caleb has played. And, you know, I think you look at the stats, 340 yards, no interceptions. And a lot of folks would say, well, you know, no duh. It seems obvious. But I try not to judge these things based solely off the statistics. But the stats are eye-popping against the Minnesota defense. But beyond that, I really felt like the way that he willed the team back into the game, the way that his demeanor seemed to be a driving force for the squad, that's where the intangible of Caleb Williams showed up in a way today that I don't necessarily think the force of his presence had been felt, even in other quality performances that Caleb Williams has had up to this point in this rookie season. Today, he looked like a guy who could tell at certain areas of the team were starting to falter, and he just didn't want them to fall by the wayside. He sort of didn't want the team to be denied. And you can't necessarily count on that being the case every single week, certainly not with a rookie. But this, to me, was the biggest and best example of what Caleb is capable of as a gravitational force, as a leader for this ball club. And it's a big deal for a rookie to be voted a captain. It's a big deal for him to stand in front of the media every week and seem composed like he always does. But between the white lines, that's what matters most. You know, his teammates get to see him the other 6 days of the week. They get to interact with him and react to him in a variety of other situations that we don't get to witness. But what I saw today was a squad that was being pulled along by their rookie quarterback and a team who felt that belief in him. That matters so much. So it, of course, and obviously, doesn't guarantee the Bears anything because they ended up losing the game. And one of the things when I was on pregame coverage over on Fox 32 this morning with Lou Kanellis and Cassie Carlson, Tina Wynn, one of the things I was talking to Lou about in studio, and actually we got a chance to talk to Daryl Moose Johnson, who called the game today for NFL on Fox. And we, you know, Moose was out there at Soldier Field with Cassie. And as we asked Moose a few questions, one of the things I asked him about was comparing where the Minnesota Vikings are, one of the best close game, one score teams in football over the last couple of years under Kevin O'Connell, and kind of comparing and contrasting them with the Chicago Bears. So in the end, what Minnesota has been in close games, at critical moments, in one score games, the fact that Minnesota won this one shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, because we've seen the Bears falter over and over and over again in these moments. And so until proven otherwise, the Bears are a team that we expect to lose close games, and the Vikings are a team that we expect to win close games, because that's what so many data points over the last two seasons and three seasons tell us. But the Bears were right there on the cusp of it, and when Minnesota gave them that opportunity, when Cairo Santos dribbles the ball sideways and, you know, the ball's going to come up short, it's not even going to make it to 10 yards, and Johnny Munt allows it to bounce off his shin and the Bears recover, he's like, oh, this is one of those moments that normally goes against Chicago. Well, look at the big brains on Brad. Here we go. There's an opportunity here. And then the rookie quarterback, the comfy QB, puts him in position, and Cairo comes out there, drills the game-tying field goal. Overtime went awry. Didn't like much, if anything, of what I saw from that Bears offense in overtime. But a lot of positives, and in my opinion, I think we're at the point in the season where I expect, as we open up the phone lines in a few moments here at 312-644-6767, there's going to be folks who continue to call for Matt Eberflus to lose his job. And I'm not here to tell you you're wrong, but I am here to point out one thing. At 4-7, if you agree with me that we're at the point in this season where the win-loss record, the win-loss results game in and game out, don't have the same gravity to them now that they did at the start of this season when there were a lot of hopes for division titles, playoff berths, things like that. If we're at that point now where, you know, we're judging the Bears more on the macro, more on what the team can be next season and beyond, I would tell you this. What we've seen the last 2 weeks from Caleb Williams, from the quarterback, indicates to me that Matt Eberflus as the head coach, Thomas Brown as his offensive coordinator and play caller, that triumvirate, that combination, head coach, OC, and QB, there's something that's working well here for Caleb. So to immediately excise Matt Eberflus, you know, get him up out the pate tomorrow or something like that, that just throws things off kilter again for a rookie quarterback. So, you know, I'm willing to just wait out, play it out at least for the time being here, and just see where this thing goes, allow the Bears to continue to evaluate all of it. But as importantly as anything, the win-loss progress is not there at all with five losses in a row. But you're seeing progress from the rookie QB. That matters. And while, it's easy to say that the progress has nothing to do with Matt Eberflus, but there is stability for the moment that's in place. So I'm here to tell you, I'm sure. We're going to open up the phone lines in a moment. I know we're going to have callers who want to get Matt Eberflus up out of here. Again, I'm not going to tell you wrong, but I do want you to consider that context, that for right now, we seem to be back on an upward trajectory with the performance of Caleb Williams. So why rock that boat right now? Why not just let this thing ride out for a little bit and see if the team as a whole, that obviously continues to play with urgency and with energy and with passion, at least at home, and they lost the last couple at home, and we'll see what happens when we go on the road, because the Bears have been awful on the road. So this will be an ongoing evaluation, but I'd say at the moment, I do at least feel like what's in place right now seems to be working for Caleb. So I don't think any of you necessarily need to be in a hurry to run Matt Eberflus up out of here, but that's just my opinion. Looking forward to hearing from you at 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. We'll also play some Caleb Williams for you throughout the evening tonight, but like I mentioned, going to open up the phone lines in just a quick moment here, and I'm with you up until 6:30 because tonight the Rams host the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Pregame coverage is coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:15 right here on the Score and the Odyssey app. Let me take my first time out, come back. We'll open up the phone lines, get to some of you out there, get your thoughts, what you saw today from the Bears, where you think things go from here, what you felt, what you liked about the rookie quarterback, and specifically, my thought about the head coach. Because I think if nothing else, Matt Eberflus is providing stability, and I don't know, I don't think that it just automatically we continue to see growth from Caleb if the defensive head coach slash defensive play caller is immediately run out of Hallis Hall. I don't think that necessarily benefits Caleb or anyone else, but that's just my opinion. We'd love to hear from you. 312-644-6767. I'm Anthony Herron. Tyler Beautyball on the ones and twos for me on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Caleb, you and Kevin O'Connell had a moment there after the game. What was his message
to you? Yeah, his message just to keep going. Hell of a player, keep going, way to fight. Sucks that, you know, he said, sucks that, you know, got to go against him for a while. Or that he has to go against me for a while. But, you know, hell of a player. I'm excited to see me out there fighting and, you know, leading these guys.
We're back with more of the Scores Bears post-game show with Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Understandable encouragement. There's the voice of Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. Talking about his brief conversation on the field after the game. You know, you kind of dap everybody up, give a little quick bro hug. Usually the quarterback and the opposing quarterback and the opposing coach will share moments afterwards as well. It's interesting. Never see those moments like Matt Eberflus dapping up the opposing QB or something like that. You know, I don't know if that's just one of those things where it tends to focus on the winning coach, you know, sort of spending a moment with the opposing young player, or because the Bears are usually in the position where they have the emerging quarterback with questions around his performance and the franchise development, all those things. So it's just more compelling to capture the moment where everyone is talking to the Bears QB. But it does feel like that. Like, we don't normally see, like, hey, I'm guessing Matt Eberflus probably congratulated Sam Darnold at some point. Sam Darnold had some really nice moments for the Vikings late in that game. We never see that moment on TV, though. We never see Flus talking to the opposing QB. Flus dapping up the opposing players. Maybe it's just because they haven't been winning games lately, or maybe it's just because the opposing team's QB situation isn't nearly as compelling as the Bears. It's just my observation about how these things tend to go from a broadcast perspective. But I did promise we'd go out to the hotline. I want to get some of you guys in here, 312-644-6767. Before I do that, want to make sure you know that you can tune in all day tomorrow for Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Robbie Maklof will be live from 12 to 5 a.m. overnight. Then Mully and Hall will have full reaction to the game starting at 5:30 a.m. And, of course, you'll be able to catch me during Bernstein and Harris at 11 a.m. I'll be talking to them, breaking down everything that happened in the Bears game that you witnessed today and the Bears game that you would like to talk about in this moment here. So let's go out to the Score listener line, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. On that listener line, let's start with Alex. Apparently Alex was over at Soldier Field today checking out the Bears game. Alex, what's up? You're on the Post Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Outstanding.
So I got a firsthand look at Eberflus today, and he just lacks the capacity to make important decisions. And what I saw today was, like in overtime, you know, he called the plays on defense, and that was his worst stretch of play calling for the entire game. So when under pressure, he can't make the right decisions, and he's just not equipped. And then in these close games we've been having, you see the incredible consequences of his bad decision-making. And, you know, it's not that he's gotten any worse. He's always who he was. But with all these close games in a row, you see the problem so clearly that he's just not equipped for the job.
I think that's a fair impression of things, because if nothing else, that's what the results tell us. It's a results-based business, and the Bears over and over again in these close games, these one-score games that they tend to be in because they play enough defense to stay in it, or they provide enough offense to make the other team sweat, or like today, the big surge of offense that came late in the fourth quarter, and then the special teams moments that took place to make sure that they were going to be able to fight back into it, tie the game at 27, get it into OT. But then It was just another example of things falling apart. And, I mean, frankly, you can certainly point out a number of moments throughout the game that are worthy of question for how things operated with the Bears coaches, with the Bears execution, certainly personnel issues that were there also. But, you know, like a fourth and four where, you know, it just struck me, what, why on a fourth and four is seemingly Matt Eberflus influenced by the crowd? You know, getting ready to run the field goal team out there from the plus 27. Crowd starts to boo. Who knows? Players are probably waving their arms or something like that also. So, all right, fourth and four from the plus 27. You had field goals blocked the last two games from 46 and today 48 yards. So as opposed to attempting a 44, 45 yard or something like that. All right, everybody's up in arms. Let me go ahead and send the offense back out there for a fourth and four. Well, you know, you send the game into overtime with some dramatics and heroics late in the game. Maybe you didn't need the dramatics and heroics if you'd, you know, sent Cairo out there to drill a 45-yard field goal. Now, there's a lot of folks. You know, the metrics mavens likely would have hammered Flus for that if Cairo doesn't drill that field goal in that situation. Maybe even if Cairo makes the field goal. A lot of these folks who want you to go for every fourth down, they might have hammered him for it anyway. And when you have field goals blocked from a similar distance in the last two games, I get it. So now everything feels up for question in that moment. But the indecision, and who knows how much of it factors into any of it, but there's indecision in that moment where Cairo's running out there. Crowd reacts. All right, Cairo, come on back. Come on back to the sideline, Cairo. So he turns around, does his little, you know, hitching his giddy-up deal, starts trotting back to the sideline. And, you know, to the credit of Thomas Brown, offensive players, called a play that works. Keenan Allen wins on the route. His horizontal separation that Tom Brady was telling us about last week. Ball grazes off his fingertips, you know, kind of tips off the edge of his hands. Did Caleb put it on him? Not cleanly. Did Keenan drop the ball? If it hits you in both hands as a wideout, you know, usually at this level, you're counting that as a drop. So you see a great player, certainly a formerly great player, perhaps still a currently excellent player, I don't know. It's the biggest game Keenan Allen's had as a member of the Bears with 15 targets, 9 receptions in those 15 targets for 86 yards and a touchdown. But I'll say this, for as much respect as I have for the game that Keenan Allen has played throughout his marvelous NFL career, it's been a whole lot of moments this season, man, where it's just there's a lot of near misses going on between Caleb and Keenan. It started way back in the first game. Oh, he could have had a touchdown pass in the opener if Keenan wouldn't have dropped it. And today, in the midst of a game where he had his biggest statistical game of the season with the Bears, still a lot of balls just narrowly bouncing off of Keenan's hands, or, hey, great route, great throw on a third down from Caleb that looks like it's going to put the ball inside the 10 with a great pass from the Bears passing attack. And Keenan goes, you know, transitions to the ball in flight, makes a great adjustment to it, gets that first foot down, but oh, that left toe just narrowly taps out of bounds and the Vikings challenge and it gets overturned. It's a lot of near misses from Keenan throughout the season here. So, I mean, you know, it's certainly unfortunate, and there's a whole lot that's gone on with the Bears passing attack throughout the season, but it feels to me like there were still a number of other examples today of, yeah, Keenan made some plays, and he is still a really good football player, but I do think you also see a player at this stage in his career who's into his 30s and a little bit banged up, playing through some things. I do think he's playing with more urgency over the last couple of weeks, more suddenness. But even yet and still, best game Keenan Allen has had this season, 15 targets to get to 9 grabs, 86 yards and a touchdown, and a number of other, like, ooh, that was close, but not quite. There was a bunch of that today and a number of those opportunities throughout the season that haven't quite come together between Caleb and Keenan. Let's go back out to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Tim is out in Schaumburg wanting to talk about the line of scrimmage. What's happening, Tim?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
All right. What's up with you?
Just, you know, I'm just kind of thinking about, like, what do you guys think about offensive line versus defensive line? What do we need to do better? I think our offensive line did a pretty good job today. Defensive line, I need more out of Montez Sweat. $98 million, need more production, right?
Yeah, I hear you on that, Tim. Appreciate the call. And I think it's a valid question to try and evaluate where they're at on the lines of scrimmage. You know, of course, there's been a lot of talk about Ryan Poles and how he's put this roster together, how he's assembled the talent that's there on the O-line especially. But we've seen it with the D-line, a couple of second-round picks on the interior of the D-line. Javon Dexter had a nice start to the season early on. As he was racking up some pretty decent sack numbers early, one of the things I was trying to caution folks about a bit with Javon Dexter, not in an effort to take anything away from the nice start to the season that he was having, but in, you know, sort of obvious pass rush downs, he's gotten more effective at using his leverage and his lean to overwhelm some blockers, get into the backfield. He's had some really nice moments in that regard. But as we're evaluating what you're really looking for a three technique on the interior of this system, this scheme, and I mean, frankly, just any defense in football, when you got an interior D line, when you got a three technique who can get it done, doesn't necessarily even have to be this scheme. But yes, it's vital in this scheme. It's frankly vital in a number of schemes in football. When you have an even front, you're looking for that guy to bring fury directly into the face of the quarterback. That's not something Javon Dexter is doing on a consistent basis. I had high hopes last season for Zach Pickens and what he might be able to do, because he did in his collegiate scheme do a lot of movement and penetration. I thought he showed a knack for that early in his rookie year, being able to get skinny, get turned, get into gaps, penetrate into the backfield. Now that he's gotten healthy, or apparently healthy, now that he's in the lineup and playing in games this season, I haven't seen much out of Zach Pickens as of yet. Now, he's just a second-year pro. He's coming off the early season injury. So maybe as he works himself into physical condition, gets into shape, maybe we see more and more out of Zach Pickens. But up to this point, you know, nothing really to write home about for what he's been doing inside. He's a lot of times, and frankly, guys all across the front, to Tim's question about the D-line, Montez Sweat included in this. Now, Montez Sweat, and actually I was mentioning Luke Kennell's pregame show earlier. One thing he asked me was about Tremaine Edmonds and whether or not I felt like Tremaine Edmonds had lived up to his big contract that Ryan Poles gave him going into last season, his second year in Chicago here, that Tremaine Edmonds is in the midst of right now. He's been a more impactful player this season, has Tremaine Edmonds, and he's 26 years old. It feels to me like he's continuing to play better and better football. And has he earned the contract yet? I essentially said this morning on Fox 32, no, but I do see him ascending in that direction. I think he's just becoming a better and better football player who got drafted at 19 years old. So he's been in the league for a long time, but in theory, there's a lot of football for Tremaine Edmonds to continue to play and continue to improve at. So I think he's a really good football player who will continue to work at getting more and more consistently impactful. He's a little too sideline to sideline to me still, in reading the run and reacting downhill toward the run. But part of the approach the Bears defense seemed to deploy against Sam Darnold, I was wondering, would we see them heat things up a little bit more because of how the pass rush had struggled as of late? Matt Eberflus seemingly in a lot of situations took the opposite approach and said, I want hands in coverage. I want length in coverage. So Tremaine Edmonds, you saw him forcing Sam Darnold to hold the football on a frequent basis, pat the football. And what the Bears did in coverage ended up leading to Darnold holding the football and was part of the reason that the Bears' D-line, the pass rush, did end up collecting three sacks on the day. Now, I thought especially in the second half of the game, the D-line was more impactful for the Bears. And in the end, Sam Darnold, after a very spotty start from a completion perspective and a sustaining offense perspective, he certainly did get going in the fourth quarter and mounted a critical drive in overtime, and he was aided by some of the Bears' mistakes. You saw Jalen Johnson and members of the Bears' secondary really getting physical, getting handsy with Justin Jefferson, and that's kind of the book on him, where that's the most you can hope for to sort of impede him is to just invade his personal space as much as you can and just throw off, try to reroute him and reroute other receivers. Bears paid him a lot of attention, and I do think that schematically, as far as the plan, it was an effective way to to just sort of make life difficult on the Vikings passing attack, but it did lead to a career day for Jordan Addison. My son's watching the game, and he's asking me at one point, "So, Daddy, hey, is that so that guy, you know, the guy from the Vikings, the number three, so he's their best player, right?" Or actually, no. I mean, he's having a huge day. But, you know, I'm trying to explain the nuances of the game and of defensive schemes to a seven-year-old. And what part of the reason, like, he's a good football player. But part of the reason he's doing so much is because the Bears are applying a lot of resources to the other guy, to number 18. So number 18 is their best player, but he's just not doing a whole lot because they're making sure that there's always hands and bodies around him and making somebody else beat them. In the end, T.J. Hockenson has some big moments. Jordan Addison has some big moments. Sam Darnold, you know, extends the play, hangs in the pocket on occasion, throws some really nice passes to put the Vikings in position to come up with the win. But you look at everything kind of in the context of comparing one team to the other, that's who the Vikings are. Even on a day where Sam Darnold didn't throw three interceptions and didn't throw any interceptions. His completion percentage was struggling throughout. But O'Connell finds a way to mount some offense. Minnesota makes the plays. Bears have more gaffes than the Vikings do. So even in this furious comeback, Bears end up coming up on the short end of that. Let's sneak in one more call before I take another time out here. 312-644-6767. And one of the things that I put out there is my impression is that I know a lot of you want the Bears to move on from Matt Eberflus. And there's not a strong case to say that's a bad move. But what I would say to consider in this, what you've seen from Caleb the last 2 weeks, I don't divorce the stability of having a head coach in place and what the Bears have been doing for 2 weeks. I don't divorce that from what we're starting to see from Caleb. I would be hesitant to rock that boat right now. I would be hesitant to throw things off kilter that much more for a rookie quarterback while he's starting to figure things out. That's just my thought. But let's go out to Kyle in St. Charles. Kyle has some thoughts and or questions about what he's seeing from Matt Eberflus. What's happening, Kyle?
Hey, how's it going? So honestly, I'm thinking this is coming down to a defensive thing, a coaching thing kind of combined. I'm thinking
all right, we lost Kyle. So he's thinking it's coming down to a defensive thing and something philosophical, and then his call dropped. Maybe we'll get Kyle back involved here, but I do want to take a timeout, come back. When we do, though, I was talking about the matchup. I've been excited to watch that matchup throughout the week between Jalen Johnson and Justin Jefferson. There's a lot that went into that. I kind of started to get into that. I'll detail what I saw the Bears defense doing that made life really difficult for the Vikings. And what the counterpunch was from Minnesota that they deserve some credit for. We'll continue to get out to the phone lines at 312-644-6767. Caleb Williams, now officially the all-time rookie passing record holder for the Chicago Bears. There was a lot of assumption about that happening, and then things fell by the wayside. But now, huge day-to-day for Williams with 340 passing yards. Loved a lot about the Bears offense, but it was different than the version of the Bears offense that Caleb Williams had success with last week. I'll detail that as we continue to move forward here as well, because I'm here with you until 6:30 as tonight the Rams host the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Pregame coverage is coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:15 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. For now, more of the Post Show. I'm Anthony Herron, Tyler Butterball on the ones and twos with you on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more of The Score's Bears post-game show with Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app.
It's wild how quickly these things can just kind of turn where, from a special teams perspective, the Bears seem more than competent on special teams in recent seasons. And for the majority of this season. And now you're just seeing a number of things that just seem to be kind of faltering a bit in recent weeks. Most notably, of course, and chief amongst those, blocked field goals in back-to-back weeks. I mean, that's just, you don't see it a lot in football. It happens on occasion, but it is surprising to see it for the Chicago Bears, just for how they've been accustomed to operating here. I mean, you know, Cairo Santos has been one of the more automatic kickers in football over the last few years. A lot of really good place kickers in the NFL, and Cairo Santos is amongst those. A lot of teams struggling, scuffling around, trying to find excellence. And the thing is, doesn't feel like there's necessarily a lot about the last 2 weeks of blocked field goals that you would directly point to Cairo. Yes, the trajectory of the football as it leaves his foot, that's a factor. But, you know, once you get outside 45 yards, 50 yards, it's not that shocking. You know, not everybody is Legatron. So, I mean, you know, for a place kicker, normally until you get to a certain distance, they're going to strike. I remember talking to Jason Hansen, old Lions teammate of mine years ago, and he was a guy who made multiple Pro Bowls throughout his career. He might be the all-time leading scorer still in Lions history. I would presume so. But one of the things I was asking him about at one point was just kind of how his stroke changes, how his approach changes. And he told me one of the most important things for him that led to him having such longevity as a place kicker in the NFL was just trying to keep, almost like a golfer, trying to keep his stroke true, trying to keep it exactly the same. Now, this is back when extra points were just a few yards, you know, before Bill Belichick made what's been a fun addition to extra points and, you know, adding essentially another 20 yards to them. But, you know, whether it was an extra point or a 30-yard field goal, he wanted everything to feel and to be proceeded with in exactly the same fashion, just from a power perspective. He didn't want to overstrike the ball until he really felt it necessary, and he didn't want to understrike the ball either just because it was a shorter or chip shot kind of field goal. And for Jason Hansen, until he started to creep beyond 40 yards, he didn't make any extra effort to put any extra gusto into the ball. Once he started to creep, especially at the point in his career that I was teammates with him in the early 2000s, all right, once things started to creep into the mid-40s and beyond that, that was when he had to put a little bit more mustard on the hot dog, if you will. So Cairo, lower trajectory on some of the longer field goals. That's not that odd. But when you're seeing, you know, last week, Larry Borum and others from the interior right getting run over on a critical field goal, then today, Braxton Jones and others on the interior left of the field goal protection being bowled over, and a field goal gets blocked. Yes, that is drastically concerning, and then you compound that from a special teams perspective with having DeAndre Carter, who, if nothing else, like he hadn't had any big returns this season since the early portion of the calendar. Essentially, like week two, he kind of went off, or maybe it was week one, went off as a returner, and it was like, okay, all right, bye Velus Jones, and DeAndre Carter's just going to return everything for us the remainder of the season. He's got this part under control. He will at least field the ball cleanly. Now today, it's a big moment in the game where he screws up. And honestly, I mean, as I'm taking notes throughout the game, I think it was the previous return shortly before that on a punt return, one of the notes I made was talking about how courageous DeAndre Carter was fielding a ball on the run, because you're taking a risk when you do that. One of the things you look to do as a punt returner is to get your body in position. It is so difficult to judge the ball in flight on these punts, and especially with the way the kickers have continued, the punters have continued to find ways to, whether it is on a spiraling punt and the wind conditions at Soldier Field being a factor in that, or what's now kind of, you know, thought of as more of the, not the true collegiate rugby style, but sometimes the punts will be more end over end, or they'll find a way to put almost like knuckleball action on them where the ball just continues to spin in the air and tail with the wind. So it's, of course, just very hard to field punts. But that being said, DeAndre Carter has not been having an issue with this for the majority of the season. So on the punt right before that, he kind of took a risk too aggressively, and he didn't want, you know, it's kind of a hidden yards decision that he made to field the punt on the fly. And he only gained a few yards on the return, but he saved a bunch of yards being willing to aggressively charge at the football and make a really daring catch. And he trusted himself. He was decisive and aggressive in it and made the catch, not only saved the Bears some yards, but actually gained a few, making a really aggressive charge at the return. And then the very next time, for whatever reason, And I don't know what took place there. Richard Hightower will get a chance to talk to the media like 3 weeks from now or whatever. You know, it feels like it's so long before we hear from the coordinators. But I don't know what took place there with DeAndre Carter, where he had seemingly some indecision about fielding the punt. It bounces off his thigh, and then the Vikings get some gift wraps points from the way that drives ends up playing out there. But I'll say this, the Bears defense, even in the midst of not having a dominant pass rush, but it was one of the better pass rushing games the Bears have had in a few weeks now. Maybe since the bye week, probably the best pass rushing game as a unit the Bears have had. But to me, it was more about the second and third level of the Bears defense forcing Sam Darnold to pat the football, to hold the football. And I thought they were really effective in that regard. They had a lot to respond to throughout the game today. But really a lot of respect I have for the response for the Bears' young quarterback, for the rookie, Caleb Williams, and his offensive play caller, his current offensive coordinator, Thomas Brown. So as I take this time out, come back at the top of the hour, I want to detail for you some of the things that many of you who were there at Soldier Field might have witnessed but didn't get an opportunity to kind of observe in detail. What was going on? Why did Caleb look so comfortable? What were some of the things that stood out to me for the way that Thomas Brown operated with the offense today that was different than the version of offense we saw from the Bears last week? I think there's some additional nuance to his play calling style that impressed me today. I'm sure the Bears are impressed by what they're seeing so far as well. You can tune in all day tomorrow for a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Rami Makhlouf will be live from 12 to 5 a.m. overnight. Then Mully and Hall will have full reaction to the game starting at 5:30 a.m. Come back at the top of the hour. You will hear from Caleb Williams as well, specifically about his communication with Thomas Brown throughout the game and what he enjoys about that. And I will detail for you as well some of the things that I'm really enjoying about the way Thomas Brown is calling this Bears offense. A lot of that on the way here as I'm taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage on The Score.
So now second and 12 after that two-yard loss. Let's see where Caleb Williams goes here. Pressure comes. Gets away from Van Ginkle. Still under pressure. Floats it down the sideline. And somehow Swift finds it. DeAndre Swift didn't locate it at first, and then it dropped in his lap at the 11. First down, Chicago.
That's how it sounded from the Fox broadcast today. Kevin Kugler on the call with Daryl Moose Johnson in the booth, or Oakman on the sidelines. One of a number of wow moments in the game today from the Bears quarterback. Caleb Williams became the Bears rookie passing leader during the contest today at Soldier Field. In the end, the Bears go down to the Minnesota Vikings. 30-27 was the final score. Vikings came out on top in overtime. But one of the things I was detailing at the top end of the post-post show, by the way, I'm Anthony Herron. I'm number two coming at you here on the post-post show on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score. Going to go back out to the phone lines in a moment at 312-644-6767. But there was a degree of force and fortitude from Caleb Williams today, from the Bears rookie quarterback, that felt more gravitational, that felt more galvanizing to me in watching it than even some of the other quality performances he had had earlier in the season. I mean, he played well and looked comfy, the comfy QB last week. But today was different, because as things were kind of falling apart and crumbling around him and the Bears are trailing by multiple scores in the fourth quarter, you saw Caleb just continue to have this urgency, this passion, this desire that he was exuding, I felt, in a more outward manner than what we had seen previously. He seemed to be in command of the moment. He seemed to have this field generalship to him that doesn't always automatically come to every young quarterback. There's a lot of veteran quarterbacks that don't get to that point where that comes to them. And there's no guarantee he's going to look the same next week, or excuse me, not next week, later this week on Thanksgiving in Detroit. But today, to me, was an example of what I felt like was the best all-around game that Caleb Williams has played. Now, you know, the run pass distribution, I've certainly had plenty of questions about that over the years, frankly, talking about the Bears in this city. But even this particular season, and part of that with the idea of taking things off the plate of a rookie quarterback. But the game plan that Thomas Brown put together really seemed to indicate that not only did he have confidence in Caleb, but also recognition of the opponent, where you got the number one, not just the top defense in football, not just one of the best pressure minds going in the sport in Brian Flores, but also just a recognition of what the moment called for. And so 48 pass attempts, when you throw DJ Moore and his incompletion in the mix on a really nice play call, but then 22 rushing attempts, six of those from the quarterback himself, some of those just in scramble moments. So I don't love the volume of passing, but it was certainly working and in rhythm, and a number of the passes just kind of had a long handoff kind of vibe to them anyway. So there's a lot about the Bears offense and the way that the passing attack was schemed that I really enjoyed, that I want to get into before I get to the Sunday Night Football coverage, because tonight the Rams host the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Pregame coverage is coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:15 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. But I do want to get some more callers in here as well at 312-644-6767. Larry is out in Bridgetown. Want to talk about what he saw out there watching the Bears game today. Larry, what's happening? You're on the Post-Post Show.
Hey, just wanted to bring up a couple of stats that I found kind of interesting. The Bears are winless when teams score more than 20 points in a game against them this year, and they've yet to win against a team that's over 500. That was something I noticed going through some stats today. And I want to disagree with you on one thing. I'm not quite as praiseworthy about the effectiveness of the pass rush as you are. Yeah, they did put more pressure on, but the Vikings were still able to throw for over 300 yards. And you made a point there relatively quickly about the amount of passing versus the amount of rushing. The Bears running backs combined for about 32 yards, and that's, if your quarterback's going to be your leading rusher and your running backs are only combining for 30 yards, that's not good. I don't care what team you are.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And I don't necessarily disagree with some of the points that you're making there, Larry. I would add this context to it. One thing with the Bears pass rush, the point I was making was not that the Bears pass rush was dominant. It was better in the second half than in the first. And a lot of that was generated because I thought the second and third level of the Bears defense was forcing Sam Darnold to hold the football. That's part of what I was detailing my description of the Bears pass rush. Darnold was kind of patting the ball in the pocket as he's cycling through his reads. I would imagine he and Kevin O'Connell having some conversations here lately where he's been turning the ball over, especially in recent weeks, at a higher rate. He's got more turnovers in the National Football League than any other quarterback. So as opposed to what he's been known for, even back when I was calling his games in college at USC, he was known to be a guy who's willing to try to fit the ball into tight windows, put the ball into harm's way. He's trying to protect the football today against a really talented Bears secondary. They had all kinds of hands all over Justin Jefferson, all throughout the route tree, being physical with him, rerouting him, like the game plan that the Bears put in place. And so the execution of the linebackers, the DBs, the nickel, Kyler Gordon, I know statistically, he's not some statistical marvel with a bunch of interceptions and tackles for loss and everything, but he's just a dynamite football player. I'm confident a lot of folks around the league see the impact that Kyler Gordon has on this Bears defense, just being in constant movement pre-snap and how he impacts things, not only in coverage, where you did see a few pass deflections in the game today from Kyler Gordon, but also as a run defender. You know, the way that with suddenness and violence, he can recognize, get into, and shed blocks, and even between the tackle box. And I don't think Kyler Gordon weighs over 200 pounds. I don't know what he weighs, but he doesn't weigh as much as most of the Bears linebackers. But he'll be right there in the tackle box, and he finds ways to sort of contort his body, to wiggle his way around, to miss blocks, and then immediately dart back forward to make impactful, forceful tackles on ball carriers that I just find really impressive. I mean, he just puts good film out there on a really consistent basis. And even if it's not him making the play, He seems to constantly be fitting the run correctly to force a ball carrier back inside to where his help is. There's just so much that he's asked to do within this defensive scheme that sets up a lot of the reasons you see quarterbacks patting the football, or reasons you see pass protections from opponents being adjusted to try and account for him. I just think he's a really fun football player to watch, and it's been good to see his continued development as a playmaker for the Bears, or even as sometimes as a guy who sets up plays that are being made by other people within this Bears defense. Get another call in here, 312-644-6767. Ryan is out in Sugar Grove and is curious about some things from what he saw in the Bears game today. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, Big Ann. How you doing?
Fantastic.
I got one question for you. Why did we, on the last kick of the game, instead of rushing everyone, there was two guys sitting back, and they should have looked at that tape of the Packers rushing the block of that kick and emulated that, but instead they, I don't know, Jack Sanborn and somebody else were just hanging back instead of coming full force. So I want to know your thoughts on that.
It's an interesting question, Ryan, and I'd be making something up if I told you in the moment. I would look to compare the two different situations, you know, by what happened with the Packers blocking a kick versus the situation the Bears were in on the final kick of the game. I'll say this. I mean, I know we've suffered through back-to-back weeks of watching Bears field goals be blocked. You know, blocked field goals occur. With the frequency we've seen them over the last 2 weeks, though, it doesn't normally come up for an individual team as often. So, you know, was there something about the Vikings formation or personnel where the Bears wanted to hang someone back, like just in case of a fake? I mean, that stuff happens sometimes where you just want to put something on film where you're saying, you know what, in case anybody's thinking about running a fake against us as opposed to rushing 11 bodies, maybe we'll just rush 10 bodies this individual time just to make sure we're not, you know, putting on film that somebody thinks we're just selling out at all times and we're going to be easily susceptible to a fake. Those types of things will factor in for special teams coordinators at times, but to the caller Ryan's question, I'll have to go back and take a look specifically at that to give a more accurate or adequate answer specifically to that for the way the Bears rushed or certain individuals that didn't rush and how that compares to what Green Bay did. I can't accurately answer that for you in the moment. I don't like just making things up. Read up a couple of quick texts. We got a lot of texts coming in throughout the show as well. And some of it in response to the point I made at the top of the post show here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I'm in no hurry about firing Matt Eberflus. And, you know, the Bears are the Bears. The Bears aren't in much of a hurry to fire anybody, usually anyway. But that being said, I think the context of the last 2 weeks, I'm normally, and I've had to hire people, I've had to fire people, and all these different things and different roles I've had in my professional life. I'm not eager to fire folks in general anyway, but I do think in the context of this situation, especially football, well, I find football to be different than most other sports. Fire basketball coach, you bring in just some new person, some new manager in baseball out of nowhere. The schematics and the volume of personnel that you have to keep synchronized is so different in other sports, baseball, basketball, hockey. Football is just different. So firing a coach doesn't normally lead to immediate positive results in football anyway, even when you got a team full of veterans. But to me, within this context, where there's already upheaval in the professional world of Caleb Williams, and so now over the last 2 weeks, you're seeing progress, how much of that does Matt Eberflus deserve credit for? Probably minimal. But that being said, to continue to kind of throw everything off kilter around Caleb, I'm in no hurry to do that, because in the end, the decision can still be made to bring in some other coach to manage Caleb's second year and beyond if that's where the Bears end up going with it. So I'm just not normally in a hurry to fire a coach, and especially in the context of having a rookie quarterback here. If it's a veteran QB, if there's some team that had Super Bowl hopes that have been dashed, to me that's a different scenario. So, you know, I'm of the impression that right now, having stability around Caleb is something that I think needs to be a factor in this. And all the context, all the evidence right now would indicate Matt Eberflus is probably not long for Chicago anyway. But is getting rid of Matt Eberflus tomorrow something that's going to help Caleb be better on Thursday? I don't see it that way. So to me, it's got to be about the full picture of what you're doing, because that's the point the season is at right now. 4-7, this season is about how do you make sure the future of the Bears, the immediate future of Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, is in as strong a position as possible. Is Matt Eberflus enhancing that future as of the moment? Results would indicate not so much. But also, I think the results of Caleb Williams specifically, that to me would indicate that stability and certainly having Thomas Brown as a play caller, it's a lot of positive things that are happening with the quarterback and the infrastructure that's in place, you know, whether it's the conversations that are there during the week and, you know, all the communication that's supposedly going on and all this other stuff. I like a lot of what I'm seeing from Caleb for the last 2 weeks for very understandable reasons. So what is firing Matt Eberflus tomorrow really, what do you get out of that? I don't know. I don't see where that enhances anything, but that's just my thought. But some of the text is actually 312-644-6767 is where you can actually text the show as well. One texter says, I hope you mean wait until the end of the season before firing Flus and not keep Flus next year. Excuse me. I never told you even last offseason they should keep Flus. I told you it was a bigger risk to keep Flus than Justin Fields. You can make a case to get rid of both of them after last season, but between the two, keeping Matt Eberflus was a bigger risk for Ryan Poles than if he would have kept Justin Fields as a quarterback. So, no, I'm not here making some strong case that Matt Eberflus should continue next season as the Bears coach. But I do have more patience with these things than a lot of you guys do, because in my world, when you fire someone, you have to have a system in place for how that benefits the franchise moving forward. So whether you Matt Eberflus doesn't come back after tomorrow, if he doesn't come back after next month, who knows? There's a lot of that that will have to be factored in to try and figure this thing out. But I would say for the moment, it's a lot of positive to at least the performance here of some of these young guys. And so stability is where I would lean, at least for the moment. But that's just me. I know a lot of you disagree about that. One texter talking about me being a shill for the Bears. Not sure how saying Matt Eberflus, you know, shouldn't be fired tomorrow is making me a shill for the Bears. Oh, yeah. Eberflus has created nothing but chaos around Caleb. Why are you such a shill from the Bears for the Bears? That is a 312 texter. I think 312 texter, if you've heard anything from me in recent seasons here, it is short of being a shill for the Bears. There's very few people who have called out some of the failings of Bears coaches, whether head or offensive coordinator in recent years, more quickly than I have. But I do want to let you hear specifically from Caleb, because now we've gotten 2 weeks in a row of Thomas Brown as the offensive coordinator and play caller. And I was talking a little bit earlier in this hour about some of the things I've really enjoyed about the way that Thomas Brown called and sequenced the Bears offense. Caleb was asked today about the communication between himself and Thomas Brown as a play caller, and in what ways, and I think it was Jason Leisure maybe that asked this question, if I'm remembering correctly, but he was asked specifically what the between the white lines, what the quarterbacking aspect of things are that he gets from Thomas Brown and how that's enhanced his game over the last couple of weeks.
All the game ops things, and that helps tremendously, because now I can get up there, I can see, I can use cadence. Like today, we use a cadence a couple times, and you know, Harrison, he's such a savvy player, vet player, that he's down at the line now. He has to get out because I've used, you know, a couple cadences, and you know, he I've used a couple cadences and helped out offensive line, myself, everybody, and then Thomas. I'll be honest with you, I really do think it's just how he is has helped. It's just his I don't want to use this word, but aura, I guess. You know, he's just he has a certain aura to him that he just allows you to play free. He knows what he wants, and you know he knows what he wants. Whether it's checks, alerts, and all of that, we still have a bunch of those and all these different things. But being able to play free, I think there's been time, like last game, you know, throughout the whole game, talking to me, communicating to me, and then, you know, when it gets to 2 minute, and like today, end of the game, you know, before OT, is just, you know, now it's time to go be Superman and go do all those different things. that I can do, but throughout the game, play the game the right way, you know, make adjustments, all these different things, throw hot, you know, make the right reads, play within the offense, and then when it's time to be Superman, it's kind of what he tells is what he tells me in the headset. Go be Superman at the end of the day.
Love that. Love hearing that. That combination of being confident and determined as a coach, as a leader, as a play caller, and having that infused confidence into, especially into young football players, where, you know, where you communicate the game plan in a definitive manner, and everyone else seems to be able to gain confidence from that. That's certainly been my experience with effective communicators, and Thomas Brown seems to be an effective communicator and an effective game planner. And in the end, there's nothing. I mean, you know, we saw a few, you know, creative play calls, the double pass that maybe could have been a pass interference, and, you know, could have been a touchdown off that moment if you get the ball on the 1 yard line when DJ Moore takes the swing pass, feeds it down to Roma Dunze. But there's nothing overly tricky. There's no reinventing of offensive football that Thomas Brown is doing. He's calling things that make sense, using pre-snap motion at an enhanced level, allowing information before the ball gets snapped, allowing additional spacing and leverage by getting DJ Moore on the move. That just makes sense. Now, he's not the first one to do it, but for whatever reason, we've seen a lot of offensive regimes here that haven't been doing that, distributing the ball to a variety of playmakers, having certain individuals sporadically be at the top of the route tree for your quarterback. Keenan Allen, at this point in his career, getting 15 targets in an NFL game. It's a big deal. Distribution. Cole Kmet, for what Cole Kmet is as a receiver, and, you know, there's a clip that used to, when me and Gabe Ramirez would host together, a clip about, you know, making fun of Cole Kmet moving like Lurch or whatever. Like, Cole Kmet is a good football player. Let's not overstate exactly what Cole Kmet really is as a pass-catching tight end, but he's a good football player, and he's really difficult to tackle when he gets the football in his hands. They got the ball to Cole Kmet. They got the ball to Keenan Allen. They tried to feed some shot plays to Roma Dunze, and they found a variety of clever ways to continue to feature DJ Moore as a receiver, as a running back. Like I was telling you, DJ Moore is like basically a running back playing wide receiver, and he was in that role in the offense today. But then also, that cleans up the pocket, even against the most formidable blitz package in the National Football League. When you test their eye discipline, when you keep them off kilter, and you have your quarterback being decisive, then that blitz doesn't overwhelm the Chicago Bears in the way that we've seen it happen in years past. So there was a lot to like about the game plan today. Certainly some things worthy of concern, worthy of cleaning up. But in the end, I think we're at the point in the season where you say, you know what? The rookie quarterback had a big day and a furious comeback that he led for the Bears. So try to take that as a positive after another loss. Fifth one in a row. Haven't won a game since being over in London going into the bye. But this is looking again like the Bears probably got a quarterback. I'll be back on The Score tomorrow. You can tune in all day tomorrow for a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. Rami Makhlouf will be live from 12 to 5 a.m. overnight. Then Mully and Hall will have full reaction to the game starting at 5:30 a.m. tonight. The Rams host the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Pre-game coverage is coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:15 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. Appreciations and salutations for all of you listening in. I'm Anthony Herron. Tyler Butterball has been my guy on the ones and twos throughout the evening. This has been the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.